Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This episode deals with matters that some listeners may find troubling. If you or someone you know is experiencing suicidal thoughts, please talk with someone you trust. You can access information about 24-hour crisis centers in your community and across Canada at suicideprevention.ca. And in the United States, you can reach the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline via suicidepreventionlifeline.org to chat with someone online. You matter. We need you here. Please take care of yourself and reach out if you need help. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
My name is Frank Silvestri. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, not a Canadian. And Philly's really close to New Jersey, by the way. And I'm here to talk to you about why I am a Patreon supporter of Vish Khanna's Creative Control podcast, the unique long-form exploration of music, comedy, art, geography, and so much more. Vish is an incredible interviewer who has a charming, disarming, funny, reverently irreverent style, which feels a lot more like a conversation with friends than a podcast interview. These conversations have included talking to people like Jeff Tweedy, Nels Klein, Ira Kaplan, Dan Romano, Carson McCone, the white hot lung Juliana Riolino, and one of my all-time favorites, the Sadies. So if you're like me and you find these kind of conversations vital, essential, and important, I hope you'll join me in supporting Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Is this love? It feels so bad. Drawing blood until we both see black. We're depleted, but we stay on track. Holding hands through every violent blast.
Nina Nastasia is a gifted musician, songwriter, singer, and producer who is currently, and for just the short term, living in Calgary, Alberta. Originally from Los Angeles, California, Nastasia has been making and releasing music for some 30 years, often in a dark-hued folk vein, which to date has resulted in an acclaimed discography consisting of 7 albums under her own name. Following the tragic death of her longtime partner and musical collaborator in 2020, Nastasia processed that loss, but also the dysfunctional and abusive relationship that preceded it, by writing songs and releasing her first album in a decade. It's called Riderless Horse, and it was released physically by Temporary Residence on November 4th, 2022, ahead of an appearance at the 2023 Calgary Folk Festival on the last weekend of July. Nina and I had a good talk about things like what brought her to Calgary for a spell and how she likes living in Canada, helicopters and the longest walk in the world for a dog, the difficult life she lived with her late partner, Kenan Gudjonsson, how she began writing new songs while living with friends in Chicago, employing electrical audio teammates Steve Albini and Greg Norman to head up to upstate New York and capture Riderless Horse, how its songs can be a conversation that she isn't leading, upcoming tour dates, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network, with the support of listeners like you, who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol. That's the primary source of revenue for all the work that goes into this podcast I make. So if you can spare some money and want to support the show, head over to patreon.com/creativecontrol if you can, and thank you in advance for your donation. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with wonderful bricks-and-mortar locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta. Very friendly staff will happily help you find whatever records you're looking for. Hey, if you want to order the new Nina Nastasia record, just go to blackbird.ca, type it into their boxes or whatever, you know, and you're searching for where you're searching for stuff. And if they've got it and they can send it right to your house, that's a possibility too. So if you can't make it to Calgary or Edmonton and you want to support a local record store, why not Blackbird Music? Again, learn more about how to do that at blackbird.ca. Plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 791 of Creative Control, featuring the thoughtful and wondrous Nina Nastasia with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Follow to the dissonance. This is love. 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 Hi, Nina. How's it going?
It's going okay, I think. So far, it's going okay.
That's about the best one can hope for on any given day these days. Where in the world are you today?
I'm in Calgary, Canada. Yeah, I'm here. I got here on the 10th. Today's the 1st of July, isn't it? So I got here on the 10th.
Pretty much.
I got here on the 10th of June, and I'm here until around the 22nd.
Oh, cool. Well, welcome
of August.
Of August. Gotcha.
Yeah, so you're here for a little bit of while.
You're here in Canada for a long while. And what brings you to Calgary, Alberta?
So the Calgary Folk Festival, I'm going to play at the end of the month. And then during COVID, I started a band with my friend who lives here, a couple of friends who live here. And he was just sending me music back and forth, like guitar parts and stuff. And then I would just write some melodies over that and lyrics. And then we ended up just recording a record with some, friends over here. And then we recorded a record. It'll come out. I think we're putting it out in end of October. And we got a grant for me to come here and record a second record. So we're sort of trying to do the same thing again. Because I've never written music that way, and it was just a kind of a new thing. So we're trying to do it again, but except with me being here, which is just, it's working, but it's a little slow. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a little slow to figure out how to do it. And I'm trying to get settled here, and I've got like a little Airbnb place I'm living in, so it's just trying to make it kind of a little home. you know, okay. away yeah. from a home that I actually don't have a home right now. I'm kind of floating around.
Hmm.
So, yeah, so that's what I'm doing here.
Okay. Now, I appreciate all that. So on behalf of Canadians everywhere, I will say welcome. welcome to Canada. Is it possible for you to cite who your collaborators are? Are they people we might know, or?
They are Clinton St. John and Jeff McLeod. They are in a band called Florida BC. And we're just, you know, kind of playing around with stuff. We did an open mic the other night, which is kind of fun.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Yeah.
And have you spent much time in Calgary before this?
No, never. This is the first time. Yeah.
Well, welcome. I don't know if you know this, but I am in Edmonton, Alberta. Moved here just
around. Really?
I'm from Ontario originally, but my family and I moved here at the end of December 2019, and then a pandemic started, so sorry about that. I think us moving led to a cataclysmic, world tilting on its axis.
Changed everything.
Yes, exactly. So yeah. I think, for those who don't know, Edmonton and Calgary, I think I'm about a three-hour drive from Calgary, or I'm guessing maybe an hour-long helicopter ride. I don't know why I thought of this, but it's probably short.
Have you ever ridden a helicopter?
Yeah, just the one time. I was in Dawson City for the Dawson City Music Festival, and they have a thing. I was brought in there for some sort of media thing, but it was really like a tourism thing where the tourism people bankrolled all the journalists who came to check out Dawson City.
Nice.
To come to the festival. Nice. Yes. So they said, "You want a free helicopter ride around the mountains?" And I said, "Oh, all right, I guess so." And
oh God,
have you ever
was it fun, or were you just? I've never been. It seems. I mean, it does seem amazing, but you know, also kind of terrifying.
Yeah, I. So what happened was they give you these headphones with a mic to talk to each other to communicate because the helicopter's so loud. And
right. The door is open.
No.
The freaking door is open.
No, the door wasn't
open. Isn't the door open?
No, not always. You're thinking of the A-team. I wasn't on the A-team.
I'm thinking of the A-team.
Yeah, no.
Totally, that's how I think of all helicopters. It's like the A-team.
Or like the G.I. Joe. No, it wasn't like that. No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No, they closed the doors, but it's still really loud. Anyway, I noticed, because I, on the way out to wherever we were going, we were all kind of joking and chatting, but on the way back, it was very quiet. And I was starting to feel a little nauseous and queasy on the way back. And when we got down there, we got off the chopper, I think is the right verbiage. I says to everyone, "Are you guys feeling kind of upset?" And everyone was just pale, white as a ghost. So something about the way back was a bit more frightening. But I do recommend it if you're ever in Dawson City to hop on the helicopter. Have you ever seen that show Succession, Nina?
I did. Yeah, I did.
I'm rewatching it. These wealthy, affluent people seem to get around a lot by helicopter. I noticed that. And I was like, why do they?
Yeah, they all just hop in a helicopter.
It's weird.
Yeah.
I went to get from Manhattan to Long Island. One of the characters took a helicopter. And I thought, that seems extreme. Anyway, that's my main helicopter experience. But anyway,
it does seem extreme. I don't know, man. Sometimes I think, a little private jet wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah. Yes, I can see that. And if that were the case, maybe we could have done this in person since we're so close to each other. But in any case.
I know, it's true.
In any case, it's nice to have you in Alberta, and I'm glad you're enjoying yourself. Are you writing songs while you're here? Or have they already been organized before you started recording?
Oh, no. We're actually writing them. So we're writing them. And I have to say, I'm in a bit of a dry spell. Like I was touring, and after the whole tour stuff, I moved out of my place. I was staying in Vermont, and I was like, okay, I'm going to be nomadic, and I'm not going to have a home because I was going to be away for so long. It didn't really make sense. And I didn't know where I wanted to plant myself. So it's like, this is going to be great. Ultimate freedom. Maybe it's just like continue being on the road. It's going to be great. But then I was like feeling sick of on the road. Couldn't wait to get here to settle. Now I'm here settling, and I'm just up at night going, what the fuck am I, what am I doing? Can I say that? What am I doing with my, what am I doing yeah. with myself? It's like, and then I think, you know, then I'm thinking, I have no ties anywhere. I want to have ties. I want to have a home. And then I'm thinking, am I just not going to be happy in any situation? Yeah. So I don't know. So right now I'm kind of like trying to make this a temporary home, figuring out, getting my dog a little more training, you know, oh. finding a pool, swimming pool, like getting, you know, doing the things you do, yeah. right? Yeah. And then also trying to, you know, do some writing and practicing. And I got to say, I'm finding it, if I'm going to be like brutally honest, I'm finding it a bit slow going. But I am writing. I mean, there are times in writing where it has to be more of a discipline than a like sheer joy fun. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just not. Yeah. And that's just how it goes. You know, you just have to have a little bit of discipline. So I'm trying to do that.
Do you reckon there's any correlation between the slowness of your creative output and the fact that you moved from the hustle and bustle, I believe, of New York City was probably your last long-standing home, and now you're in a big city in Calgary, but comparably maybe a little quaint, maybe a little slower. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, no.
No? Okay.
Well, not quite, because I moved out of New York and lived for about a year in Vermont. I moved to Vermont from New York. I had to get the hell out of there. And I realized, like, I don't really like cities. Mm. I mean, you know, I can't say that across the board. I mean, there's some cities that are great, but I certainly can't deal with New York City right now. And also just the fast paced, big, I can't really handle it anymore. Sure. But but Vermont was a little, it was amazing, and it was a little isolating. And I'm not decided yet where I actually want to kind of land for a period of time, but Vermont was absolutely beautiful, and I loved it, and so it was good. But I think it's more like when everything kind of stops, because there's, you know, being on tour, certainly it's like there's a constant movement. You have to do something all the time. And I think I do much better because I'm not the most disciplined person. So I do better in that environment where there's things happening, constantly things happening. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. I don't do as well when things slow down a bit and I feel, you know, I start to feel kind of tired, and you take a nap, and then that bums me out. And then, you know, all those things, all those sure. like just being sure. human. Issues
Absolutely.
Of just being human.
yeah. Well, for those of us who have been to the United States of America, mm-hmm. I would argue that states like Vermont and Maine are among the most Canadian states in mm. your country. Do you see a connection between your time in Alberta, just the feeling of being in Canada, as it might compare to being outside of New York and in a place like Vermont? Any connection there?
Yeah. No, actually, yes. Calgary seems, I've like driven around quite a bit because I've found the best dog park in the friggin' world. It's so amazing. I've never witnessed a dog park like this, because usually the dog parks I go to are fairly small, you know? Mm. And so, this one is like Central Park. It's huge. It's got nice. All these different, you know, you can go through a part and it's like the woods, and you go into, you jump in the lake. Then there's like, you know, meadows. I mean, it's just all sorts of things in this one park. So it's really exciting, you know? Yeah. And so, but it still feels like a big city, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's yeah. clean, so that's yeah. You know, Vermont, where I was living, was, it's not at all a big city. It's like really small town. So
yeah,
and it's funny. Like that's one of the things I'm kind of coming to a realization of. It's like I can see. I have to be careful of this, because I can see a kind of chasing this ideal thing, or this chasing happiness. You know, and it's like mm-hmm. it's just, you know, like the idea of. Because the thing about Vermont is, you know, I loved it so much, but then I'm just like, we'll try to get a coffee. And I'm like, why are you talking to that person? I need my coffee. Like, why are you so slow getting the coffee? Like, I want a New York experience. I'm going, what am I doing?
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just chill out. Or, you know, how come I can't find, you know, this? All the first world's, you know, little problems are ridiculous. But,
yeah, sure.
Yeah, just trying to find, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm finding there's so much, in a weird, I guess a lot of things are coming up because I'm just sort of slowed down to the point of I'm thinking about a lot of things, you know, working things out that were rather difficult, like that, you know.
Yeah.
That situation the record came out of was such a tough one, and it's going to be a tough one to sort out for years to come. I think it's not an easy thing, but anyway.
Well, we're going to get into this record as best we can, and I appreciate your candor already, and within these songs. To keep things a little bit lighter for just a moment, though, I want to ask about your dog. Has your dog lived a New York life and a Vermont life and now a Calgary life?
He's never really, well, when he lives for New York, he just goes to visit because there's times that I had to go there. Mm-hmm. And so he's been there enough where he knows this Brooklyn Dog Park, and he knows, like, you know.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I mean, the first time he went there, it was, he seemed like he was very flat on the ground, you know, like he was sort of spread flat. He was kind of crawling, almost crawling on the ground because it was so overwhelming.
Oh, boy.
Because he was really, you know, in Vermont as, like, I had him at 3 months. So he was in, I mean, three months. So Vermont. He was just like hanging out in Vermont and even on a farm, just like, you know, so he was. It was a shock. The city life was a bit of a shock.
Yeah, I wondered if since moving the dog to Canada, if you've noticed any change in his personality. Is the dog more polite, self-effacing, overly apologetic, becoming more Canadian, anything like that?
Well, I can tell you, Canadian dogs are just the loveliest.
Oh.
In that big, huge park with so many dogs, there has not been one asshole dog there.
Nice.
Everybody is super nice. And because Misha loves other dogs, mm-hmm. so he gets along really well. And he's very good with dogs that are aggressive because he kind of just goes, I don't want to be around that. So he leaves it alone.
Right.
Because we've gotten in some spots where, you know, in Brooklyn where there'll be like a dog that's a bit tough, and you just got to get away from them. But there's not been a single incident at that park. It's like and it's huge, and there's so many different kinds of dogs there. You'd think something might go awry, but it's good. But he has developed this we're almost too attached. I mean, well, I'm pretty sure we're too attached. I'm getting him trained now, and for the second time, because I got him trained before, but this is like a kind of dealing with some of these issues of he's extremely protective, and he gets almost, you know, he can bark at people, which he's the kindest dog, but he can end up getting on this kind of almost attack mode looking, which it looks ridiculous because he's fairly small, but also he's like enough to kind of make somebody nervous. And also it's just, you know, who wants that? Who wants a dog just like barking at them like that?
Sure.
But, you know, I also took him on tour with me all over Europe and the UK. So that was, and he did go on the Mogwai tour too of the States. So he ended up, it's just not an ideal situation for a dog to be like, you know, and so I started to feel a little bit like, what am I doing? But I mean, he does seem happy. I mean, if he's with me and we do go out a lot and do stuff. So, I think he's got a full life. It's just, it might not be the life he wanted, but who gets the exact life you want?
Well, the dog's not going to know what the difference. It sounds to me. To paraphrase a Norm Macdonald joke, that dog has been on the longest walk in the world for a dog. just constantly moving, right? That's what you're saying?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, he is. So I think he does like his routine and he does like to have a kind of home. I mean, it's funny. He loves the car. So the car is kind of like a home where, you know, he can be always pretty calm to go on a drive in the car, you know, because I actually drove here from Vermont to New York to Chicago to here. And so, I mean, he was and he's actually amazing on the road. He's actually quite good.
Well,
so
sounds like he's had a lot of experience on the road. So
he has had a lot of experience.
Yeah. So that's different. Yeah. You can't compare that life, your dog there to other dogs because, your dog doesn't know the difference, right?
He kind of did the first part of his, you know, the first months of his life, he was kind of doing the things that he was meant to do. Like we actually, there were a lot of sheep near us. So a friend of mine, we were like, let's just see what he does. And he immediately he just had the instinct. He knew how to be a sheepdog. It's amazing to see. Yeah. So I think he would, I think if he had a say in it, he would want me to raise sheep, probably.
Wow. So a lot of nurturing, caring, empathetic aspects to your dog. I believe animals do reflect their owner's personalities. Do you believe in that?
It scares the hell out of me because I can be very anxious. And a lot of times I'm just like, oh my God, what am I doing to this poor animal? Like this animal is going to take on all my anxiety and you know, and I think maybe he does. I mean, he's very sensitive to, you know, body language and all that. He's very sensitive to stuff. So, I mean, as animals are, so, I'm sure I need to, you know, manage those things for myself. And like, we're actually, for part of the training is partially for me to deal with my separation anxiety, you know, from him as well as him from me, because it's, you know, cause I've decided, I'm actually going back to do a short, like a 2.5 week UK tour in September, and for that one, I am dropping him off at my cousin's house. And that'll be a big thing. But he loves that because there's three other dogs there, so he does. I know he'll love it there, and I don't want to. I just thought it's a lot. It's especially the plane, the whole plane thing.
I think you're making the right call. I can relate to what you're saying about your dog and being fearful of passing along idiosyncratic attributes because I have two children and they're very similar to children are very similar to the dogs.
Dogs. I don't know how you do it.
It's complicated, but you're like, oh no. Well, every time I'm mad at a child of mine, I'm like, they're acting like, I realize after that they're kind of acting like me and I'm mad at myself, you know? So I feel like I can kind of, I'm anxious about that.
Right.
So I think I relate to what you're saying. When you're nurturing a creature and they start to reflect you back to you, it kind of can freak you out, is what I'm getting at.
So. And just the responsibility to another living thing is, I don't know how you do it with kids. I mean, I'm constantly, I have to calm down a bit because it's, you know, I always imagine the worst thing to happen, always. Sure. I don't know what that's about, but, even if I'm driving, I imagine the horrible crash and I don't know why.
As I'm driving down the
freeway, I imagine what's the worst that can happen? And then I play it through and then I can kind of move on with my day. But that does seem to be a kind of ongoing thing. So there's a little bit of what if I friggin' kill my dog? Like that's, you know, it's just accidentally, obviously accidentally. And, but it's just this sort of feeling like, oh my God, I'm going to ruin this living thing.
Who am I to think
I could do this? Yeah.
I had to go to some counseling when my mother was ill. She's okay now. She's fine. But I had to go because I was struggling with it. And, you know, one of the main takeaways I had from the person I saw there was you can't control everything and life is going to happen kind of stuff. It's like, it seems sort of obvious, but like,
know,
I was also like, look, I'm afraid I'm going to get sick. And they're like, you're not your mother and you're not, you're your own person. You're not going to get sick, or you might, and you might, and that's what life is. And so I feel like that's the bargain you enter into when you do take care of a smaller, seemingly more helpless being, like a dog or a child. Man, I'm going to get some letters about this comparing to the dogs to the children. But I'm just saying that's the part of the deal. Yeah.
I had a friend that was just having a baby, and I was like, oh my God, right? It's the same thing. Like I just got my three month old puppy, and I'm just like, oh my God, what when they do this? And I'm just going, oh no, I gotta step back a bit, because I'm basically comparing it like it's the same thing. And it's not, you know, it's not.
I will tell you, the dog people who do that, they drive the parent people nuts. I'm like, are you serious? You're seriously comparing your dog that you feed food? Like, you know, what are you doing? Like, it's not the same. But
yeah, no, it's not the same. It's not the same. But
I do relate to it's similar, but it's not the same. Can we leave it at that? I feel we're both going to get bad letters from the dog people and the people people.
The dog people are going to go, it is exactly the same.
I know. It's fine. It is sort of similar, but it's not the same.
But the other thing
I can relate to you on another thing, though, because one of the reasons my family and I moved, my wife's family is from Edmonton originally, so it was to be closer to them. But we were kind of unhappy. We were unhappy with our jobs.
Mm.
The real estate market was so complicated in that even though we owned a house, we couldn't upgrade. We had a two-bedroom with four people in it. Not sustainable. And we would bid on lots of houses and we wouldn't get them. So we moved out of some, you know, a bunch of... There's a lot of unhappiness in that stew of issues, I will say. And so we moved. Mm-hmm. But then what I can... And I can relate to you moving around a bit too, maybe to find the happiness. But one thing I've discovered is if you're unhappy and you move to get happier... You know who comes with you? Yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
You're unhappy. Oh, no, yeah.
Yes.
So you can...
It is absolutely true. Yeah.
So it's not as simple as just like, I'm in a new place, I'm going to be happier. You're bringing yourself with you. So you've found that yourself? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, it's like I have, you know, a very large ghost that comes with me. Like everywhere I go.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. Yeah. I mean, there are some things. I definitely think there are some things that help, like certain environments help, you know.
Yeah.
I love being around water. It just immediately brings my blood pressure down to be around water.
Huh.
And, you know, nature and, but, a big one, you know, community is the absolute huge one, you know, and I think it really helps to have a good community around you, people. And, so that's an important thing too. But yeah, I mean, even an ideal situation, if you haven't kind of figured out how to deal with some of the, like your own issues, that's not going to go away, that's for sure.
Well, I think this is as good a segue as we're going to have to start talking about this monumental album, Riderless Horse.
Sure.
That came out I guess it's been about a year since it's been out, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so.
First of all, Nina, sorry for the delay. I was busy. I didn't know that you wanted to talk to me, and I only found out recently. And I feel badly now, but no, I'm kidding. Thank you for
for
making time for me. Better late than never. No, it's good. No, this is a beautiful album. I think it behooves me to ask you to provide some insight into its background for people listening to our conversation, whatever you're willing to talk about, please do.
Sure.
I feel like you've been quite candid about it. Before you do that, I will tell you that the lyrics and the music here, reading the lyrics off the page has been very moving for me and difficult on some level. And the way it's presented is quite interesting to me, because some of the phrasing and the arrangements and your approach come across sunny. come across joyous and jaunty, and yet if you actually, as my wife did, she was listening more closely one morning as we were making breakfast or whatever, and she's like, this seems very heavy and intense, but the packaging is relatively, not always the case, but generally there's joy in it. And I want to, anyway, sorry, I'm on a ramble here and I don't mean to be. Let's begin.
It's good.
Let's begin at the beginning. Where did this record sort of come from? What inspired it?
Well, so where do I start?
Yeah.
With someone, we might as well have been married because we were together for about 25 years. And it was one of those things where it's weird to call him my husband because we never got married, but also weird to, you know, say boyfriend, you know,
yeah. 25,
at that point.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But anyway, so it was a extremely one of those very kind of intense relationships where right away we connected very closely with and meshed very well creatively and all this stuff. But very quickly in the relationship, it became it was very controlling and quite abusive, not in a physical way, but in a psychological way. And, you know, someone talked to me a little bit about coercive control, and it had quite a bit of that, like very much was under his thumb. And I've tried to be as candid as possible about it because I feel like it's an important issue and it's a confusing issue. Like, it's funny. Whenever I say abusive, even now, I feel like, oh my God, I feel like an imposter. Like I'm not, you know, that's not actually true. I shouldn't say it's abusive, but it was absolutely abusive, you know.
Sorry to interject. Are you drawing a delineation between physical abuse and mental abuse?
Oh no. No. Well, I guess the thing about mental abuse can be a tricky thing because, you know, I'm not saying one is not worse than the other. They're both horrible things. And the difference with the physical one is you could lose your life, you know.
Yeah.
But there were times where I kind of wished that I would get hit because then I could recognize what that was.
I see.
You know,
I see.
It was hard for me to recognize it as abuse because I actually believed all the stuff that he was saying. He could be extremely cruel. I'm not going to get into I've kind of decided I'm not going to get into specifics with actual things. Because I don't, you know, that's not really important. And the important thing was that is to write it in such a way where I didn't want to vilify anyone. And I don't to this day. Like he was a complicated person. I don't believe that people are just 100% cruel. You know,
sure.
I mean, they're all things. Some people lash out, and that's a difference, you know, and can be quite hurtful. And so, it got to the point where I lost. I kind of gave up control of everything in my life, and. You know, that's on me too. It's like, I'm constantly thinking to myself, I'm trying to figure it out now, even like, how did that happen? Like, how did I sort of fall into that relationship and stick with it for so long? And it's, you know, it's a question I'm still trying to sort out. But it got to a point where, on the outside, we were trying to, it was all quite hidden. Like everything was just when we were alone together, things would be really, really terrible. And it got to the point where I was walking on eggshells with everything. And I lost a lot of myself. And then the music, we did, you know, we did everything together. We weren't apart ever, which was what really he needed in that relationship, you know?
Yeah.
So we created some amazing memories and in music and amazing. I'm very happy with the work that we did together. He did a lot of the, worked on arrangements and you know, a lot of the production parts of it he did, mm-hmm. but I was constantly failing, you know, and it became such a misery. And I had this feeling that I was ruining not only my life in music, but his, you know? And so I finally, we weren't surviving it at all. And I just said, okay, I'm going to stop doing music. I'm going to basically try to get work and support him to do whatever he wants to do in terms of art stuff. Cause he did a lot of different things, but he had a hard time, afraid of failing himself, I think. And so it was a lot easier to kind of put the spotlight on me and be disappointed in me than disappointed in himself, I think, for his own pursuits that were separate to me. So I stopped for a long time. And then it's a hard thing to explain because it was like, it was almost like we were, we just weren't surviving in any way. We couldn't, we were constantly, couldn't survive financially in any way. And we were, I knew that if we stayed together, I don't know what would happen. Like we were tapped out on getting any help from anybody because we were constantly so unstable.
Yeah.
And the meanness was just, I felt like I was getting sick physically from it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And so I don't know what it was, but I knew that if I didn't, you know, right that day say we can't, we have to be apart, if I didn't do that, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't find the strength to do it ever again. I was getting much, you know, getting older, and there's no way I'll be able to do this. I had so many fears of ending our relationship, and part of the fear was that I didn't think he could actually survive. And unfortunately, my biggest fear happened. Like I said we should, you know, I said we should be apart for a while and try to be whole people before we can even think of being together. And then I left to stay somewhere else and very quickly, you know, he just gave me a lot of things and then left. And when I went back to where I was staying and went through some of those things, it was like, you know, he had given me baby pictures. And then right away, I was like, I need to look for him because this is just doesn't seem right. And so we looked for him. And so less than 24 hours, and we finally found him at his art studio. So, and he had died by suicide. So there was, you know, it was a terrible event, but I was so kind of determined to live that I almost and I had never stopped really doing music in terms of writing, or, you know, I just didn't pursue it. I kind of went back to it. I dove into it right away and immersed myself in it, and started writing, started collaborating with those friends and here. And And that was stuff I could never do, because I was always, there was always this, everything had to be so perfect. I had to be perfect, and I was so not perfect. Mm. So I was constantly failing. This was the first time where I didn't give a shit. I just wanted to do the thing. I've never had any desire to be, quote unquote, the best at something that is actually impossible to be the best at anyway. It's such a subjective thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't interest me. Like I'm just like, this is just what I'm doing now. So it was a bit of a, you know, it's like a therapy session to just kind of vomit out that record, which is what it felt like. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of those songs were just, and they were written without any kind of scrutiny. Like I didn't sit and, you know, go back and forth with, is this good enough writing? You know, is this the writing good enough? Do I need to, is this enough? Is the poetry good enough? Like it didn't matter. I wanted it to be raw. And so like I felt like, in a way, you know, even though I had been writing the whole time back then, it felt different in that way, you know. Yeah. And so there was this incredible freedom, which is, you know, I mean, a suicide death. I've been around a good amount of death in my life at this point. Yeah. And a suicide death is like, it's like no other. There is something, it comes with so much. I mean, I hear about it from other people that go through the same thing. There's this guilt, this constant guilt of like, oh, if I did this, or why did I do this? If I had done this, this wouldn't have happened. And, or, you know, this feeling like I killed this person, you know?
Yeah.
And, I don't know. It's a hard one. It's a hard one to.
Yeah.
Get through.
Yeah.
I guess.
No, I'm 100%. I want to express my sorrow and send my condolences to you, Nina. Like, this is.
Thank you.
Quite a. Yeah. I don't even know. It's amazing that you can talk about it, frankly, and we're able to express yourself on this record. I mean, that's the fact that you were able to find music again after that. Yeah, I mean, that's the heartening part of this, I suppose. But again, I appreciate your candor talking about it. And yeah, sorry.
I do feel like a need to talk about it because, because, you know, also like, what are we doing here? Like, we're all here on this friggin' earth. You know, the problem is not talking about it, I think, you know, I mean,
sure.
Anytime I hear about like the whole somebody committing suicide, I just want to go, oh my God, if you could have just waited, like, I don't know, 20 minutes and talked to someone, just that, maybe, you know what I mean? It's like it's such a, it's you know, I don't know what it's like to be have suicidality. Yeah. I've never had that. That's never been my go-to. I mean, I just want to live as long as friggin' possible.
So yeah.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
But, it just, you know, I do know like how, like extreme sadness and how a mood can come and how temporary it is. You know, it's just, it's constantly shifting and changing. And if you just find a way to get through it, I don't know. But, you know, I mean, the sad thing about him was that he was extraordinary, he had an extraordinary brain. It unfortunately didn't work for him very well because it made him miserable, but he was extraordinary in what he could do. artistically, he was really inspiring. I learned a lot from him. He had an incredible understanding of why something might work, why it wouldn't work, in terms of writing. And so I kind of learned a lot from him in that way, of his kind of critiquing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, on the good days, one of the days where he wasn't like, you know, where it wasn't so, you know, where it wasn't mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah. He does sound like he was an expressive person. And I want to ask you a little bit about the narrative structure of this record and some of these songs, because given the context of the record, I can hear your voice from a personal place trying to articulate feelings and thoughts about what this relationship was like. But there are songs where I feel like maybe I'm hearing his voice and his perspective on life, on you, on the relationship. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Because, you know, I was, at least during that time, and still even, I mean, there's so many questions. Another thing about suicide is like just you know, you go through, just going through this kind of, well, I don't know if call it an archaeological dig, trying to find little hints of some answer to what was going on in his psyche or whatever, you know. Or who he was, even. And so certainly, yeah, I'm sure certainly those that would come out. And I wanted to have a little more of a perspective on who he was, because people aren't all one thing, you know, and it's very easy to vilify someone, you know, and I didn't want to do that, so I needed his voice in there.
Yeah, I can hear it. I can hear you.
Yeah.
What I hear is empathy there, trying to figure out his point of view on all of these things. And it's giving voice to someone. I don't know. I'm not smart or wise enough to know how our brains work or the way chemicals work, but it seems to me in trying to provide him with a voice in your songs, you're also trying to answer some of these questions that you have about why someone would do something like this, what their thought processes might be. So I can only assume it's, I hate to use corny terminology that we all use now as armchair psychologists, but I assume this is sort of a therapeutic exercise for you to be like,
absolutely,
what was he possibly thinking? And maybe I can give him his voice here. Is that is that accurate?
Absolutely. I mean, and I think I probably, you know, I mean, there was a period of time after the record, there was a period of time where, you know, like I never felt angry. And I never felt angry after he died at all. Angry at him, angry at anything. And then, and it almost like I almost had a pride about it. Well, I certainly had a pride about it. Like, well, I'm not angry, you know. But, you know, then I'd have to go into New York City and I would just be furious at the city. Like going, yeah, I'm not mad at the city. I'm not mad at New York City. I'm mad at Kennan, you know, like, you know, I am mad. You know, so, I mean, I probably have less. It's probably good that I wrote it then so that I could have that kind of like real need to empathize through it, you know what I mean? I did, you know, I had a moment where I realized I was getting, it was actually making me, you know, it was actually giving me physical pain, you know, and I came to a realization that like, oh yeah, I'm really angry, you know. It's like at myself for kind of staying in something that long or allowing this to happen. But, you know, also like feeling as though he took a big chunk of, you know, my life, even though there was like a lot that he gave, there was a lot of good that he gave me, but also, and there's also this whole thing of like, I started getting mad that he didn't leave me a note saying it wasn't my fault. And it's a little bit like, I don't know what the head of a person that's about to do something so drastic, you know, the idea that you expect him to actually sit down and do that. But, you know, I was kind of like, was this a fuck you to me kind of thing? Or, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe it was a little, I don't know.
For what it's worth, you have every right to think that. I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's, you know, you're kind of like grasping at straws to try to understand it, you know.
But it's not cruel to wonder about these things. I think, in my limited experience with losing people to suicide, you can't help but have potentially a wider range of emotions, maybe, than when someone goes of natural causes, so to speak. I mean, particularly when people lose people to circumstances that seem avoidable, like accidents or whatever, you can't help but go through the range of anger and blaming someone, something for the situation, right? So in your case, I'm not skilled in this regard. I have no background in it. But for what it's worth, I think you're dealing with this very well for someone who is so closely connected to someone who, by your own accounts, was very psychologically manipulative. And I can see why you would draw the conclusion that this is no note. This is the final fuck you kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, again, I don't mean to sound like one of these people that knows everything, because I don't want to be one of them. But I'm just saying, I relate to where you're coming from.
Yeah. I mean, who does really know? It's like, who really does know? I mean, it's it does, you know. I mean, and even, I mean, the thing that's tough is that I will never know, because he's not here to tell me, you know. I'll never know what was going on, you know. What he was saying. I think the way in which he did it was somewhat of a slower death, which means that the only thing I can take is that his feeling about himself, either he wanted to learn something, I can see as well, but also just a self-hatred, you know. And it's just sad, all around sad. But
yeah, it is sad. I will hearken back to what I was saying about the counseling thing that I went through, which was the subtext of what I think the counselor was telling me is, like, you can't control what other people think and do.
Right.
You can really only manage your own thoughts in a process like this. You can't control what your body does sometimes. We get sick, we get this, we get that. But really, like, it's a futile effort to be worried about how you can manage other people's lives and thoughts and things like that. So I feel like there might be a connection between that line of thought and what we're talking about now. Like, you can't.
Oh, absolutely.
Listen, I appreciate, again, your candor talking about this very difficult subject, and I appreciate these songs. But one thing we haven't talked about is the way you made this record. Two members of the electrical audio staff traveled off-site for a field trip. Steve Albini and Greg Norman, I believe, are the ones who worked with you on this record. Why did you seek them out to make this record in, I believe, upstate New York instead of Chicago? Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was actually for about a month or two, I went over and lived with Steve and his wife, Heather. I lived with them at the house, and, you know, Heather had flown to New York right away when everything happened and helped me kind of get organized, which was really great, actually. And so it was a great, great time to be with them. And so I just, you know, I would write these songs. And then, you know, I remember I just, like, sit on the kitchen floor. It's kind of my favorite. One of my favorite spots in their house is sitting right on the floor of the kitchen. They've got this great kitchen, and Steve loves to cook. So he was, you know, he'd be cooking and, you know, just, like, play the songs, like, as they came, you know, just sitting on the floor playing the songs and they're cooking and everything. And then, so, you know, it was a natural thing that, of course, Steve was going to record it, because he's recorded, like, almost all of the records, actually. There were a couple recordings that I did. Well, one recording, but I don't even think it came out. Anyway, I've got to go back and see. But
sure.
So I have no memory. So, you know, he was going to record it. He was just like, I'll record any way you want to do it. You know, like, let's do it. Let's record these, you know. And, you know, walking into electrical audio was going to be tricky. Like, I can really compartmentalize very, very well, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But I knew that going in there, it would be hard to walk in it. Cause I've only been there with Kenan.
Oh,
and it's always been that scenario where we would, you know, and, you know, and the last time I recorded there, it's funny. It was like, he was very private and we were, you know, nobody could know that this kind of, how we interacted. Hmm. Nobody could know that, right. You know? And so, it ended up being a big shock, which was a, you know, hard thing to decide to actually put out there, but I felt like I should.
Yeah.
And anyway, so, well, just cause the record was pretty clear and it sounded more like a diary. So I thought, well, okay, better talk about it. But, you know, even in there was a recording at Electrical Audio that I had done with him nothing came out because it was kind of like, it was not, I don't think we got a lot of good stuff because there was such, the dynamic was so rough, you know, between us. And Steve could kind of, because at this point, we're such good friends, he could tell something was going on. And he actually stopped the recording. And of course, I was like, he's like, I don't know. I don't like how he's talked to you. Da, da. And I was like, no, this is how we interact. It's fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Mm. You know, because the fallout would be too big, you know,
right.
if it said anything. So it was just it was not great. So Heather had I think she was the one that had the idea, why don't you do like a sort of a field recording? We do like an Airbnb somewhere upstate, whatever. And then it ended up being pretty perfect because friends of mine have a house up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being just the best scenario because, I decided I should do it solo because I felt more solo than I'd ever been. And I might as well just do it solo.
Yeah.
So Greg Norman is a good friend and Steve is a good friend and both of them knew and loved Kenan, which was great, you know. Mm. And my friends upstate, same thing. They knew Kenan for years. We knew us and all this was a shock, but they knew they could understand that he was more than, you know, this thing that was so negative, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it ended up being like we took a little road trip, got there, set up, and they had this little guest house. It was almost like a silo. It was pretty cool looking building. And the acoustics were good, and we recorded in there. And then Steve got really liked the idea of getting some of the nature sounds, which was pretty great. And so we did a little of that. And then we would just, you know, record during the day and then break for, you know, meals. And we'd all have meals and drink wine and eat dinner and like laugh because there's a million very funny stories about Kenan and then just cry about the whole thing.
Yeah.
So it was a really beautiful, beautiful time. It couldn't have been more perfect, actually. And so, yeah, that was the, yeah.
No, that's I mean, that's actually a lovely thing to hear
about. Oh, yeah.
This difficult material. I wanted to ask you, so Cork and Pour and Creek and Chimes are among the tracks here that reflect that kind of ambient recording. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Well, we did do a song at the creek and to incorporate that. And it ended up just sounding like shh instead of, you know, like real, I don't know. Yeah. It just didn't end up fitting right. So just to get the sounds on their own kind of ended up sounding better. And the cork and pour thing, I was like, oh yeah, we got to get that because that's like a if I'm having my last drink, it's the last, you know, the last song. Let's get that.
You know? I see. Okay.
So,
in terms of the album artwork, I'm struck. I only have this currently digitally, so I'm staring at a computer screen when I see this, or a telephone when I'm looking at your album art. But it seems stark and striking in its own way. Did you want to give me some background, or give us, I guess, some background on that?
Yes. So in the beginning, I got in this idea of like, I'm going to do everything myself. I'm going to lay out the thing, do the artwork, do everything, which, you know, so happy to not do that idea because this was so much better. My friend Elizabeth Neal is like, she's a lovely painter. I love her work. And, you know, I asked her, was like, I don't know if you'd want to do this, but it, you know, she was up for it. And, you know, we talk about doing other little projects together because, you know, I really think her work is beautiful and is inspiring to come up with, you know, I don't know, poetry with it and all that other stuff. So yeah. We just talk about that stuff, but, you know, in our lives to figure out, you know, what little block of time we can do something else. But she's a great artist to check out for sure.
Oh, cool.
If you don't know.
No, it's great. I wondered if there was a connection between that and the themes of the record. It does. I don't know. It works somehow, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, we like, you know, looked at a bunch of pieces and we're like, oh, I know that. We kind of agreed separately on that one. So
yeah, I won't do a rudimentary art critique. I'm not smart enough to do that, but I
neither am I. Like, I don't know either.
But I do think
I like it.
It does suit the mood of the record somehow.
So
I appreciate that. Well, Anina, I don't know. I just want to say I appreciate you sharing all of this with me and my listeners and for being so candid about this record.
No, it's, thank you so much.
No, of course. We started off kind of talking about your future plans, which is unusual in a sense. Like, you're working on this stuff in Calgary, and you already sounds like you already have a release date, time frame in mind, end of October, I believe you said. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So those are obviously big, big future plans. And you mentioned playing Calgary Folk Festival, among other things, and a tour in the UK. Yeah, I feel like I know all your future plans already, but this is normally where I ask. So I'm going to stick to my guns. Beyond all that stuff, is there anything you want to talk about that's coming up?
Well, so I am in the process of putting together the next record. So I'm working on that, and I'll have, you know, and hopefully I'll be able to work with, I'm going to go back to my cousins when I'm done with my dog, and I'll be staying with them for a little while. And then in that time, you know, it'll be through the holidays to be with family. And then I've got some friends in LA and we'll work on the next record.
Oh, okay, cool.
So that should be, fun. So I'm just trying to organize that at the same time. So we'll figure out.
So you don't consider the Calgary collective you're working with to be your next record. That's a whole new thing.
Yeah, it's a whole new thing.
Okay.
That's a full on collaboration, which is super fun.
Okay. Nice. Well, yeah. That's exciting. I look forward to hearing and seeing more of you, hopefully, you know, touring about and whatnot.
Oh, yes, me too. Let's hope.
if people want to learn more about you or, you know, follow you on things or look at your website, stuff like that, are there places you can direct people to?
Oh, God, yes. And they're new.
Oh.
So I think it's Nina Nastasia Official. You can find a website, and then I do have Instagram. I think all those things will pop up. I have Facebook. I'm much more kind of attached to the Instagram parts.
Yep.
But also do the other things as well. But yeah.
Okay. That's fair. And the record that we've been talking about actually came out. I guess it came out digitally in July of 2022 and then on vinyl in the winter, November or something like that. Is that right?
That sounds about That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. People can order the record from your Bandcamp or something?
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, well, this was lovely. I usually ask people if we can go out on a song from a record that we've been talking about or whatever. I wonder if we can pick a song from Riderless Horse to go out on, and I'll ask you to do that and maybe tell us why you chose it. Is that something you can do?
Sure, yes. And it's a song that I don't perform much because it's just a bear for me to do because it's actually, I get really sensitive to it because it's just, I feel like it is almost the spokes song for the record. Yeah. That makes sense?
Yeah. Yep.
So I would say Ask Me.
Ask Me is the song you've chosen. And it's, like you said, it's not something you know
it's
what?
It's not something I play often because it's just not, it's not all that much fun.
Right. But you want people to hear it now, of course.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, I'm happy with it. And I also feel like it represents, it kind of, at least lyrically, represents the record and kind of the experience in general.
Yeah, 100%. It's a conflict between, it is the should I stay or should I go potentially of the record, if I may be a little silly about it. But yeah. I
can, absolutely. It's that for sure.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, let's hear it now. This is Ask Me from this brilliant new record, or it's older now, but this brilliant latest record, Riderless Horse. Nina, thank you so much for this time. I hope you enjoyed yourself, and I hope we speak again someday. And
oh, I did. Thank you. I hope so too.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye.
You might think best to pack up your bags, stop all of this sadness, and leave me so that I can live the very life you can't give. And what is it that you want from me? A song, a lonely song for us to sing to sleep. Well, you might ask me, why can't it be you to leave and start on your own anew? But I can't. I know what's next. I keep you alive as best as I can do. I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, but we're closer to dying each day. We're trying so hard just to stop the decay. But I'll be the one to choose life over illness, to be born from this deadness and leave. And I might think twice when the damage is done, and oh, what a price I will pay. For freedom, for freedom from all the waves, the ways we've gone wrong. And I love you, I love you, I love you so much that I need you to stand on your own. So I will finally run to save what is left of myself. A song, a lonely song for me to sing to sleep. A song, a lonely song for me to sing to sleep.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot of courage there, and a lot of joy somehow, too. It's a complicated conversation in a lot of ways, but I really want to thank Nina for making time for me and being so candid and forthright about a very difficult situation. I, despite the sad circumstances, it was very nice for me to be able to connect with her. Long admired her. So once again, thank you to Nina. Thank you out there for listening to this conversation with Nina, which happens to be the 791st episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever it is you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkhanna.com. You can like Creative Control currently on Facebook or follow the show currently on Twitter at vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and Instagram at vishkhanna, and I'm on some of the other things now too, Blue Sky and what's the other one? Oh, Threads? I don't know. I'm on social media, so if you want to find me, you probably can. Thank you. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain all the work that I put into making this podcast every week. $6 American or more grants you access to exclusive content. You get the episodes earlier than everybody else. And if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, just message me on Patreon and I'll get you one. While supplies last, they are finally starting to dwindle. So if you really want one, just reach out on Patreon. And I'll head down to the basement and look and see if I got what you need. Thank you very much. Patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to the wonderful Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about at their website, blackbird.ca. You can order records right there too, wherever you are in the world, I think. Never done it myself. I just go to the store in Edmonton, but that's my understanding. Go to blackbird.ca to learn more and tell me if I'm not right or wrong. It's the same thing. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, all fine independent businesses who offer in-kind support for this show. Thanks as always to my friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music he makes on the show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thanks again for listening to this episode with Nina Nastasia and for telling your friends about it and maybe you know fans of hers. You might want to hear that and spread the word about this show. And if you can, subscribe to this podcast or follow it, that would be helpful as well. Thank you very much for listening. I will talk to you very soon. Bye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.